Track 13. With Remembrance Day this month, our resident historian explores the lives of First World War heroes Lance Corporal Ernest Seaman and Lieutenant Gordon Flowerdew, who both tragically died in action.
They took away my night new clothes and dolled me up in track. They marched me 20 miles a day to fit me for the war. I didn't mind the first 19, but the last one made me poor. Oh, it's not the pack that you carry on your back, nor the Springfield on your shoulder, nor the five.
During the last 12 months, I have told the stories of four men of Norfolk who were awarded the Victoria Cross during the First World War and lived to receive their awards. There are two more brave men whose actions earned them the highest decoration for valour, but who died in the actions for which they were decorated, and whose awards were made posthumously. Coincidentally, both, though born in Norfolk, emigrated, it is believed, to Canada, from which they returned to fight. Ernest Seaman was born in Higham. His father died when he was still a small child, and his mother remarried. His stepfather, Edward Palmer, ran a taxi service at this station, but was also the landlord of the King's Head in Scole, whence Ernest moved with his mother and older sister, and where he attended the local school. After leaving school at 14, he moved to Suffolk to live with an aunt and was employed initially in Felixstowe as a page boy in the Grand Hotel. A little restless, he also apparently tried his hand as a steward on a liner and as a billiard marker in a club in St. James's. After 3 years, in 1912, he is believed to have emigrated to Canada to seek a new and perhaps more fulfilling life. Soon after the outbreak of war, he returned to England, intending to enlist. This ambition was, temporarily at least, thwarted when he was judged medically unfit for active service. Ernest was a persistent man, and finally, late in 1915, and having travelled on his own initiative to Le Havre, he was there able to enlist, though not regarded as fit for frontline service. He became a baker in the catering section of the Army Service Corps. The terrible casualty rates, especially after the Battle of the Somme, meant that additional personnel were required at the front, and one of the methods employed to accelerate the flow of replacements was to reduce the level of fitness required for such service. This was Ernest's opportunity, and he grasped it. Transferring to an infantry unit, the 2nd Battalion of the Royal Inniskilling Fusiliers. He quickly proved his worth. His company commander later described him as one of the best soldiers he had met. After active service both at Ypres and Passchendaele, he was promoted to Lance Corporal. Just 2 weeks later came the action for which he was to be decorated, and in which he died. He had already been recommended for the Military Medal for his courage in tending wounded colleagues under fire. But on September the 29th, 1918, he engaged in the 5th Battle of Ypres. The battalion was ordered to take the small village of Terhand. Its advance was halted by a nest of enemy machine gun posts. Armed with his Lewis gun, and on his own initiative, he charged one of the enemy posts, killed the officer commanding it, and returned safely to the line with 12 prisoners and 2 captured guns. Later, he repeated his action against another machine gun post, again successfully, but was shot immediately after he had done so. His body could not be recovered. His name is inscribed on the Tynecott Memorial at Passchendaele. Some sources suggest the Victoria Cross was awarded on the basis of an upgrade to his company commander's previous recommendation of the Military Medal. Others that he was awarded both, though the former seems probable as he does not appear in the list of those awarded the MM. The Victoria Cross was presented to Ernest's mother by George V at Buckingham Palace the following February, and was later sold at auction and presented to the Museum of the Royal Logistic Corps. Ernest Seaman is remembered with pride in Norwich. Exactly 100 years after the action in which he died, there was a special ceremony to lay a stone commemorating his bravery at the Norwich War Memorial. The story of Lieutenant Gordon Flowerdew's bravery so captured the imagination that the then war artist Alfred Munnings, who had spent his youth in Norwich, painted the action in which Flowerdew was to die. The painting, Charge of Flowerdew's Squadron, is held in the Canadian War Museum. Gordon Flowerdew was born in Billingford, one of 14 children, 10 boys, 4 girls. All the boys were educated at Framlingham College. As one who suffered the suffix tertius in my early school days, I can only feel sympathy if the youngest boy was perhaps known as Flowerdew Decimus, although they were presumably not all there at the same time. On leaving school at 18, he decided to emigrate to British Columbia, where he took up ranching. The family background had been in farming, though presumably not on a sufficient scale to provide a career opening for all 14 children. Apart from ranching, he undertook several other roles, managing a butcher's shop and producing fruit. He was an outstanding horseman, winning competitions, and this, combined with his enthusiasm for shooting, was probably what led him in 1911, by then in his mid-20s, to join the Regiment of Cavalry, a militia unit where he further distinguished himself, not just by winning both more shooting and riding competitions, but also by his successful horseback pursuit of 2 thieves. When war was declared, Flowerdew volunteered as a private in Lord Strathcona's Horse, a regiment which had been formed in 1900 to fight in the Boer War. It was funded and raised by the first Baron Strathcona, a prominent Canadian businessman. Such regiments had been privately funded before in the full glory days of empire, but by the early 20th century, this was unusual. Be that as it may, the regiment is still today a part of the Canadian Army. As the name implies, it was founded as a cavalry regiment, and in October 1914, it sailed for England, and thence early in 1915 for France, where its early experience was unmounted and fighting as infantry. Early in 1916, it reverted to its traditional mounted role, which it retained for the rest of the war, and it was in what has been described as the last great cavalry charge that Lieutenant Flowerdew's action brought about his death and earned him a posthumous award of the Victoria Cross. The horse was essential in the Great War. Motorized transport was still in its early and unreliable stage, and most of the movement of men and material up to the front required real rather than mechanical horsepower. There was a problem in that the need was just as great on the home front, so that military demands created a shortage of horses to make deliveries, service farming needs, and transport people. The laws of supply and demand drove prices up, both nags for everyday work and hunters, both for the officers and for the cavalry. But the army generally got its way. It seems a little bizarre that the war that first saw the development of the tank, still in its final year, required the employment of the sort of charge characteristic of the Crimean War. Now, 64 years after the charge of the Light Brigade, was an encore of a headlong and desperate charge against well-guarded enemy artillery. This time the charge was deliberate, not the result of misunderstanding. The situation was that the Germans had launched a spring offensive, Operation Michael. Its aim was to drive a wedge between the French and the British Expeditionary Force, driving the latter back to the Channel coast and thence to be withdrawn home. When the German assault started, it was of massive strength and began to drive the British back. The Canadian Cavalry Brigade was charged with blocking the advance near the village of Morial, where the enemy were preparing for a crossing of Lavre River and seeking to occupy a wood. Several squadrons were sent dismounted into the wood, but by now the Lieutenant Flowerdew, in command of C Squadron, was still mounted and ordered to go around the side of the wood to stop German reinforcements. They climbed an embankment and, at the top, saw that ahead of them were large numbers of German infantry supported by both machine guns and artillery. They were only about 300 yards away. Flowerdew, drawing his sword, ordered his men to deploy into line and shouted, "It's a charge, boys, it's a charge." His squadron faced fire from five rifle companies, an artillery battery, several mortars, and a machine gun company. Casualties exceeded 70%, most of them fatally wounded, but the charge succeeded. The Germans were unable to reinforce the wood and unable, as they had intended, to take the nearby village, which would have afforded them access to the river, which was the last natural barrier in their path. Gordon Flowerdew was wounded but conscious and was carried back into the wood and thence to a field ambulance. His wounds in his chest and both thighs were too severe, and he died the following morning, at least knowing that his sacrifice had not been in vain. The citation begins, "For most conspicuous bravery and dash when in command of a squadron detailed for special services of a very important nature," and closes, "There can be no doubt that this officer's great valour was the prime factor in the capture of the position." His Victoria Cross? It was donated by his mother to his old school, Framlingham College.